Well, hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am David Connolly, your host. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view the details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So without further ado, let's move on to the main headlines from the world, from even around the world. We start with news that vandals have defaced Uffington White Horse in England. Then we have an amusing story that Scottish engineers are worried about a single prehistoric potsherd. Aryan burials from 1700 BCE are excavated in Pakistan. And in a new book, we have a first complete look at the technology of the Clovis culture in the Americas. A 13,000-year-old clay figure is found in Japan, and in England, burial mounds and other features are located thanks to LIDAR. Back in Scotland, there's a push to complete, wait for a modern Scottish stone circle in Glasgow. No, really. And Dolavira, one of the largest cities of the Indus civilization, is investigated. We then move to South Africa, where we have evidence of a Paleolithic ochre factory, and finish with the news out that Neanderthals were living in Britain much earlier than previously thought. This is according to new dating of finds from a bypass project. Officers from Thames Valley Police were called to the 3,000-year-old Uffington White Horse in Oxfordshire on the 3rd of June this year, where they found that the head and eye of the horse had been sprayed with purple paint. A banner that read, "Fathers for Justice, Stop the Secret Family Court," was recovered from the scene. New Fathers for Justice and Real Fathers for Justice both denied responsibility. Police and members of the National Trust have been working to re-chalk the monument. Sergeant Steve Clark said the monument has been pretty much restored now and is back to how it should look. This was a mindless act of criminal damage on an ancient monument, and he would urge anyone with information about the incident to come forward and speak to them as soon as possible. A spokesman for the New Fathers for Justice, calling himself Captain Equality, denied any responsibility for the attack, saying that fathers have started using the name for their own protests and they do not condone any vandalism. A rival group calling themselves the Real Fathers for Justice, who claim to have been operating since 2005, also distanced themselves from this stunt. The White Horse at Uffington is the oldest dated chalk figure in the country and forms part of the landscape of ancient sites. Smart it was not, though they have achieved their aim of getting publicity, but personally I don't think of any other childish way that they could have gone about this act of vandalism. A discovery of a late archaeological find has posed a raft of potential problems for constructors starting work on a multi-million pound flood defence system for Inverness in the Highlands of Scotland. Highland Council chiefs and the company commissioned to build it are adamant, however, that they can overcome this issue. After many years of discussing the project, it emerged recently that a small segment of Bronze Age or perhaps Iron Age pot had been discovered at the location. The builders are currently seeking guidance from their own experts in respective fields with government agencies. Speaking before a turf-cutting ceremony at Knocknagail Farm, the council's project engineer Colin Howell said, "It's one of the most challenging schemes that I've ever worked on because of the environmental constraints and what has been found." He added that he was genuinely excited by the discovery of this tiny piece of pot, but they had made provision in the contract for finding such a thing, so it was of no financial significance to the council. I had actually hoped it was going to be something slightly more impressive than a tiny piece of pot, but there you go. I can assure you, and for no cost, that I don't think you'll have anything to worry about there, Mr. Howell. Archaeologists claim to have excavated ancient graves and artefacts made of clay dating back to the 17th century BCE in remote Parwak village of Chitral province in Pakistan. Members of the excavation said that the fresh findings would add new information about the Aryan civilization, as human skeletons and pottery objects found there belonged to that period. The Aryan people spread from Central Asia as nomads from between 1700 to 1500 BCE, and some of them settled in the area which is now Chittoral Province. Well, of course, before it was Chittoral Province. The excavator said the late archaeologist Dr. Hassan Dani named the civilization of the time as the Gandharan grave culture. However, they added the newly found skeletons were buried slightly differently from the other ones excavated in Singur and Chamarkun. A new book on the stone and bone tool technologies of Clovis culture of 13,500 years ago, published by the Faculty of Texas State University, is the first complete examination of the tools themselves and how Clovis culture used them and transmitted their production. The snappily titled Clovis Technology, International Monographs in Prehistory, Archaeology Series 17, covers the Clovis culture's making and use of stone blades, bifaces and small tools, as well as artefacts such as projectile points, rods, daggers, awls, needles, handles, hooks and ornaments, made from, bone, ivory, antler and teeth. It examines the tools used to make other tools as well, such as anvils, and explores how Clovis culture acquired and transmitted stone tool production. It's co-authored by Texas State archaeologist Michael Collins, who also directs the Galt Archaeological Site in Central Texas, the world's largest Clovis excavation. It's estimated that more than 60% of known Clovis artifacts have come from this site. Until recently, Clovis technology was believed to represent the America's earliest human inhabitants, having arrived in the hemisphere from Asia by walking across the Bering land bridge between 11,000 and 8,000 BCE. However, recent discoveries at Galt and elsewhere of stone and bone artifacts predating Clovis have convinced most archaeologists that a culture existed in the Americas at least 500 to 1,000 years before Clovis, possibly arriving by boat or by foot. Well, that narrows out just about everything. Let's hope they didn't come by air. This first thorough examination of Clovis technology is a step towards determining what came before Clovis, Clark Wernick, executive director of the Galt School of Archaeological Research, said. By starting with what we know, we can now look for indications of what came before. A clay figure believed to be 13,000 years old and one of the oldest in Japan was found in an archaeological site in Higashiomi, Shiga Prefecture. The tiny 3.1 cm high figurine depicts a female torso with breasts and a waistline. The figure, which was discovered at the Aidanekomahara archaeological site, dates back from the Jomon pottery culture era. Another female clay figure from approximately the same era was also found at Matsusaka, Mie Prefecture in 1996. Well, short and sweet. We hope we'll be looking at an exhibition that actually includes some Jomon pottery figures in a newly revamped Past Horizons later this year. Archaeologists using LIDAR, which is light detection and ranging, have located prehistoric burial mounds in the New Forest near Salisbury in England. Discovering such sites in woodland settings such as the New Forest would normally be time-consuming and require exhaustive ground-based field survey techniques. However, LIDAR is a 50-year-old detection technology originally used to discover submarines, but archaeologists have been being able to discover its applications for discovery within the last 10 years. LIDAR employs a pulsed laser beam which sweeps from side to side as a plane or helicopter flies over the area of interest. One of LIDAR's greatest benefits in the forest is its ability to penetrate all but the densest vegetation, like conifer or holly. It reveals very subtle features which are difficult to see on the ground and are even more difficult to map accurately, particularly in woodland. Amen to that one. It should be noted that often a potential archaeological site that has been picked up by LIDAR needs to be verified by focused small-scale field survey, known as ground truthing, because the technology can be indiscriminate in what it shows. The application of LIDAR, however, can greatly accelerate the survey process. At the current rate of survey carried out in the national park, it would probably take around 200 years to obtain a full understanding of the archaeological resource, but with LIDAR, they hope to do it in 10. Ground truthing. I like that. I feel I'm going to use that from now on. I'm just going to go out and do some ground truthing just now, in fact. For centuries, a hilltop high above Glasgow in Scotland has been the scene of solstice celebrations. Sighthill Park lies under the line of midsummer sunset, with Glasgow Cathedral at one end and Summerhill at the other. The cathedral sits, in fact, on an ancient Neolithic excavation. In the 1970s, Duncan Lunan, an amateur astronomer and science writer, began construction of an aligned standing stone circle to map the movements of the sun, moon and stars. Over the course of several months, calculations were completed for the precise placement of the circle. Using photographs and astronomical charts, 17 of the sun and star stones were lowered by RAF helicopter flying off from HMS Gannet. The moon stones were too large to be transported by air, though. Lunan noted, getting the precision right was the really hard part. And the winters of 1978 and 79 were really terrible, so you could hardly see a thing. Lunan originally planned to create a replica of Stonehenge and Callanish stone circles in Glasgow, but inspired by the unique astronomical significance of the setting, the project evolved into a true stone circle. The project was a tribute to four faculty members at Glasgow University who advanced understanding of ancient astronomy. It started with Alexander Thom, who, between the two world wars, was inspired by the falling moon over the Callanish stones. This was at a time when the most archaeologists wouldn't go near the stuff, claiming that primitive society was not capable of such understanding. It's fitting that this stone circle is in Glasgow as a tribute to them. Thom's work was continued by his son, Dr. Archie Thom, and two colleagues, Dr. Ewan Mackay and Professor Archie Roy. The initial project was started under the Job Creation Scheme, but was not completed when funding was withdrawn by then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. Boo hiss. Four of the stones still lie under a bush in Sighthill Park, waiting to be put into place. Lunan now hopes to complete the project and revive the solstice celebrations. He regrets the fact that the project has become lost to the history of the city. There's still nothing up there to say actually who built the circle, who it was built for, and how it works. He's been told that nowadays children are actually afraid of it, and they think that there's black magic and all sorts of things taking place there. That is something that he wants to change. He's hoping that the stone circle will become a major attraction in Glasgow, featured on the city-wide astronomy map. Plans including placing markers to represent each solar body using exact scale within the city limits. The stone circle would represent the sun, and Pluto would lie at an appropriate distance at Cathkin Braes. A lecture on the Sighthill Stone Circle is scheduled on June the 21st, followed by a visit to the circle for Midsummer Sunset. Well, I have to say, you learn something new every day. I had absolutely no idea about this circle at all. Dolavira, a fortified city, has been recently identified as one of the largest sites of the Harappan or Indus civilization. Spanning from 3000 to 1500 BCE, the city relates a tale of the rise and fall of a civilization that once flourished across India, Pakistan and Afghanistan. First discovered by Jagatpati Josh in mid-1960s, who then went on to work at the Archaeological Survey of India, Dolavira is situated in Gujarat's Kutch district on the island of Kadir, surrounded by the Great Ran of Kutch, which, believe me, is a very strange place. Dolavira adds a new dimension to the personality of the Indus civilization, and its long cultural sequence gives us important information into the lifespan of the Harappan urban system. The sequence is in its entirety from the stratified debris that spreads over 1500 years. Dolavira is characterized by monumental architecture, massive fortifications and the use of dressed stones, elaborate water management and meticulous town planning. Discoveries even include a 3 meter long Indus inscription on wood, the longest ever found on the subcontinent, as well as scores of terracotta figurines, bronze tools and even gold jewellery. Lying between the seasonal channels of the Mansar and Manhar, the water management system formed an integral part of the city. And the Archaeological Survey of India has unearthed a series of check dams. This kind of efficient system the Harappans developed for conservation and storage of water typifies just how advanced they were, given the state of technology in the 3rd millennium BCE. That's a fascinating culture which I'd love to learn a lot more about. Now to South Africa, and it's South Africa with no football. A 58,000-year-old site at the Sebudu Rock Shelter in KwaZulu-Natal near Durban has revealed innovative cemented stone hearths that may have been used for the mass production of ochre. The discovery was made by a team led by Lynn Wadley, a professor at the University of Witwatersrand, and will appear in the Journal of Archaeological Science. Ochre was used as pigment, preservative and medicinal compound, and was mixed with plant materials and animal fat to create an adhesive. Its colours range from yellows, reds and oranges to browns, and derives from mineral oxides in the clay. Red ochre is formed from yellow and brown by heating to at least 250 degrees Celsius. Ochre residues have been found on ancient stone awls believed to have been used for the production of leather clothing. This may indicate that ancient humans wore colourful garments, a fashion that continues today. Adhesive from ochre was probably used to attach stone arrowheads to wooden shafts and the stone axe heads to handles. Wadley excavated four hearths with cemented stones. The hearths contained ochre powder and may have held grindstones or storage receptacles. 8,000 pieces of ochre were also recovered. She theorised that the raw clay was collected nearby and brought to the site to be heated and ground. Previous to this find, not much was known about the processing and use of ochre. Well, hopefully they know a little bit more now. It's long been thought that ancient man had abandoned the shores of Britain during the period 200,000 to 65,000 BCE, but new excavations in Kent in England have shed some doubt on this. A combined team from Southampton University and Oxford Archaeology, funded by the UK's Highways Agency, have found work flints while excavating a new motorway junction near Dartford. The sediment in which they were found has been dated to 110,000 BCE, at a time when the severe cold dropped the sea levels and the Neanderthals walked on a land bridge from what is now northern France into Kent, following game which was migrating northward. The system of dating used was OSL, or optically stimulated luminescence. The technique measures the amount of light emitted from a grain of sand or other crystalline material to calculate when it was last exposed to sunlight. Dr. Whittle from Durham University has doubts, however, about the accuracy of OSL dating, postulating that the technique is, shall we say, in constant development. He also stated that, "I suspect there's a possibility that OSL dating might not be giving us a true date." Dr. Wenham Smith, a team member from Southampton University, however, was more optimistic, but believed that, exciting though the find was, more evidence was needed to corroborate the findings. Should the OSL dating be correct, then the Neanderthals returned to Britain much earlier, in fact about 40,000 years earlier than previously thought. They may have been attracted by the sight of flint-rich chalk downs that could have been clearly visible from the other side of what is now the Channel. So that's an interesting piece of news about OSL, and a fascinating way to end, as ever, a fascinating news. If you have not done it yet, then there's more fascinating stuff to be found at Past Horizons. You haven't read issue 12 yet, or the other 11, well, get yourself over to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. And can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, can be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you will return again to us next week.